What is going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode. So to have my guest on today. What's going on, Andy?
What's going on? All is well.
Dude, we've got a heavy hitter in the room here. Andy runs a company called Weekend Maids. Andy, how long has Weekend Maids been around?
You know, we're actually celebrating our 36th year in business this year.
36 years running this business. That's awesome, dude. And you bought it from someone, right?
No. It's a family business that I took over about 15 years ago.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay, so you've been running for about 15 years.
Yep.
Damn. And where are you guys located?
We're headquartered in San Diego.
Awesome. Andy's business has been around for a long time, have done millions and millions of dollars in total revenue. Absolute wizard when it comes to this, one of the OGs. So I'm stoked to have Andy on. Andy, one thing I actually wanted to talk to you about on this episode is compliance. And that word sounds so boring, right? Like, but yeah. it's so needed. Andy, can you tell us a little bit about the board you sit on, the nonprofit?
Yeah. So, you know, I sit on the board of a nonprofit called the California Coalition of Domestic Referral Agencies. It's a mouthful. We call it CCDRA for short. And it essentially is a nonprofit that helps business owners with compliance, just making sure that they're running their domestic referral agencies according to the rules and regulations of California, which are pretty restrictive.
So, Andy, dumb this down for me. What's a referral agency versus an employee-based company versus a contractor-based company? What is all this stuff?
So a referral agency is basically a very important middleman. So think of it as a traditional employer would, in the cleaning business, you would be an employer, you would hire housekeepers, you'd give them supplies, equipment, transportation, and they'd go out on their routes and you would set those routes up and you would train them on how to deliver the final results of a house cleaning. Mm-hmm. The agency model, you're working with independent contractors and you basically are bringing together those seeking domestic services with those providing domestic services.
Perfect. So what most people differentiate as, are you doing the employee model or the contractor model, the 1099 model? That's
exactly
kind of what this is, along the lines of that. Yep. So for the purpose of what we're doing here, we're going to call it an agency model. But Andy, why is it called a referral agency?
Because essentially, that's what you're doing. You have a registry of professional contractors, independents, and a client comes to you and is seeking house cleaners. And you as the agency would refer that independent worker to that client's home. That's why it's called a referral agency.
Perfect. Andy, I'm stoked to do this episode because I've been seeing a lot of people start their 1099-based cleaning company wherever in the U.S. And I know just by looking at them and what they're posting online for the people who do post online, 99% of them are doing this wrong. And what I mean by wrong is the labor laws in the U.S. are no joke, especially in this industry. If you're not compliant, you will get bit by the IRS and these fines are freaking massive. And I see these people doing it. I'm like, I don't know who's teaching them this. I kind of do know who's teaching them this, but like, it's not the right way to actually do business, right? Like there's certain ways of actually doing things compliantly. So I kind of want to dive into that. So this episode here, and what I'm going to ask Andy is, if you are a 1099 based company, whether this is for cleaning and maids, whether this is for non-medical in-home care, whether this is for mobile car detailing, whatever type of local business you have, there's a certain way of being compliant and a certain way of not being compliant based off the laws of what we're seeing here. So Andy, here's a question for you, man. From what you've seen, what are the most common pitfalls where people screw up on when they have a 1099 based business in home services?
You know, I would say, I mean, there's a lot of things that I've seen over the years, and I've advised a lot of and mentored a lot of business owners over the years as they've built up their businesses. Some of the biggest issues I've seen is just lack of transparency about your business model and how you're putting yourself out in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest things, at least in particular to our industry. There's many bad players out there that mislead the marketplace in terms of the kinds of resources they're using. For example, you have people out there that are intentionally misguiding their client base on the type of resources they have. Like they actually have 1099 workers, but they're lying and saying that they have insured and bonded and so forth employees when in fact they don't. That can cause a lot of problems downstream. So identifying yourself and being transparent about how you're running your business to your client base and to your workers goes a long way in terms of protecting you from audits and other issues downstream as you build your business.
Cool. So I'm going to summarize that before we get to the next point. People on your websites, if you're writing, we are insured, we're bonded, we are the best cleaning company ever, that's wrong already, right? Because all of a sudden, someone can say, well, if you're using 1099s, then those are the cleaners. You're not the company, but you're saying we are the company and we are insured. We provide the supplies. That's not true. So Andy, one hack I always use is if you look at my website, there's nothing that says we. The word we is just eliminated. Candidly, that's good copywriting too. Like a customer doesn't want to know about you. They want to know about them. So the easy way flipping it is saying you get the best cleaners on the market. You know, you get this, you get this. And that's an easy way to say that it's not us. Would that be accurate, Andy?
Definitely. And oftentimes what I see is that when people start their businesses and for whatever industry, but let's just give house cleaning as an example. There's many out-of-the-box website templates that are out there, and a lot of people just sort of tweak it to match their needs, but don't go through the boilerplate texts about guarantees and insurance and all those things. Those are just built-in texts that came with the template, and oftentimes people don't realize they need to change all that to reflect the reality of how you're running your business.
And what is number two? What's the second biggest mistake that most people make that would be an easy fix?
Yeah, well, one is commingling your funds, your operational funds, with the funds that you're collecting from clients. And of course, we have very specific laws on that in California. But I would say just as a general philosophy, I've seen this time and again where people are using the same bank account to pay their workers, to collect fees from clients, but then also to pay the rent, pay the internet, pay for whatever other marketing they're doing. It's all coming out of one account. That is very dangerous. So the IRS would see that. Because you are commingling funds. Technically, when you're operating with 1099s, you want to keep your accounting clean. All your operational activities should happen in a separate bank account. All your collection activities, where you're collecting fees from clients, should happen in a separate account. This is just a general philosophy in accounting, but it would serve you well even at the federal level with the IRS.
So to summarize this, the money you're collecting from the end customer should go into one account, and you pay out your cleaners or service workers from that account. That's it. Then afterwards, you move the difference out to a different account. But why, Andy? Why can't I pay you from that account?
Because if you were caught commingling funds, the kinds of companies that do that are employers. And so employers have the right to use one bank account and do everything out of that bank account, because then they could pay their employees out of that bank account. They could pay their rent and pay for chemicals and supplies out of that same account, because that's what employers do. But agencies don't do that. Agencies have some restrictions. And by agent, I mean, again, a business that's using a 1099 registry.
Yep. And for everyone listening, it sounds silly. Like, what? This is my money in my account. I could just use it as I want. Sure, that's fine. However, if you get audited, they are going to ask to see your bank accounts. And if there's a lot of commingling of funds, for whatever reason, the government says, well, that's what employers do. Versus if you say a company like, let's say, Uber or TaskRabbit, I guarantee their funds go into one account. They pay out the contractors from there, and then they move the rest to another account because it's just cleaner. And it sounds like such a silly thing to do, but I promise you, for whatever reason, we don't know how the government thinks. They think same account means employer. So keep that in mind.
And it actually, I would just add one more thing, is that it's a philosophical thing. Who is paying your fee? Are you paying the worker their fees? They're getting a percentage or some amount on whatever service they provide, and you're collecting a certain amount. Who is paying your fee, and who's paying the worker's fee? So in our view of the world, the client is paying both fees, your fees and your service provider's fees. So how that is handled using this accounting structure is really important for audit purposes.
Dude, I love that. And actually, I'm going to steal your number three, Andy, because I'm going to dive into that, is the philosophy of what a 1099 based company is. Now, if you just understand this concept, this will allow you to do pretty much everything else. If you are running 1099s in your home service business, what that means is you are not the employer, obviously, right? But that also means the client is not just your client. That is the client of the 1099, and you are the middleman. Let me repeat that.
That's right.
You are the middleman. That is all you are if you're running a 1099 based business. So what that means is the client is the service provider's client. So when you collect money from the client, you're pretty much saying, I'm collecting it from you on behalf of the service provider. I'm paying them out, and whatever difference is from my middleman services, I'm taking that out. That's kind of what the philosophy should be, as opposed to you saying, oh, I'm going to pay you a cut of my entire fee. That's not the philosophy of how this is.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. All right, Andy, since I stole number three, number four, what is the fourth biggest mistake that people make when running a 1099 based business?
I would say you have to have a solid contract with your service providers. Okay. While the contract in and of itself is not the determining factor in between in terms of a relationship between an agency and service providers, independent service providers, it is an important one. So operationally, there's a lot of things you have to take into consideration, but you need to have a solid contract. And that's where I would always advise business owners to work with an attorney in their state, make sure that they have something that's locked and loaded and has been vetted by someone that specializes in this type of case law.
So can I just go to LegalZoom and get an independent contractor agreement?
I wouldn't do that. There are independent contractor agreements on LegalZoom and these types of providers, but those are very vanilla, very plain. You want to go to a labor law specialist that will make something a little bit more bulletproof so that it doesn't come back to bite you later on. Imagine if a worker goes to the state's Department of Labor and issues a wage claim and it's illegitimate. It's not a legitimate wage claim. But if they do that, you could get into a lot of trouble. Your business could get into a lot of trouble. So when you have a solid contract, you can hang at least part of your hat on that contract when dealing with attorneys and so forth.
Yep. I love that. And that is accurate because that's going to be the first thing if you get audited that the auditor is going to ask for is, let me see the contracts.
That's right.
And you want the, like, if it's a one-time fee, just pay a lawyer, get a real contract done, and then you're set. But if you just try to get it a cheap one off of LegalZoom at the boilerplate, this isn't going to work for your state. This not going to work for everyone. And it's such a minor expense. You pay $300 to get it properly edited for your state, and then you're a little bit safer, right? So I think it's a worthy investment. It's a one-time expense.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, our nonprofit, we offer that as part of the membership. We give you a California view of the world, but we give you sample contracts for members. And then we advise members that are outside of California to vet that out with an attorney in their state. And that would cost you a lot less because the work's already been done. An attorney just needs to sort of edit it and revise it to match the specific rules of that state.
Yeah. And I'm part of a CCDRA. The contract in there's solid. Like it's for California, but like Andy said, what goes in California is probably going to go everywhere else because California is the strictest state. So like, here's a rule of thumb for everyone listening. If you're like, hey, I'm not in California, CCDRA is from California. Originally, CCDRA was made for California referral agencies, but because California law is so damn strict, if you apply these rules to your state, I can't say 100% guarantee, but more than likely you're going to be compliant. Right? It's as simple as that. And luckily, because there's so much kind of case law in California, and there's literally a nonprofit which actually does this for people, which is CCDRA. If I was starting a business elsewhere, I would just copy what CCDRA says because then I know I'm good. Right? So that's just one tip for everyone. I'm part of the organization. I have my referral agency agreement from CCDRA as well. So it's solid. Andy, let's go to number five, the fifth thing that people screw up on the most.
I would say it has to be operations because oftentimes I talk to business owners and in their minds, they have convinced themselves that, okay, you know what? I'm a business owner. I'm going to run my business with great granularity and attention to detail, but they seem to have forgotten that they're using 1099 workers. And so again, philosophically, you are not telling people what to do. You cannot tell them what to do. They are independent workers. You have a business relationship with these workers. And so you have to extract yourself from the day-to-day operation of what might happen with an employer and think of it, think of yourself as an agent, perhaps no different than an actor relies on his or her agent to get them work. It's no different than that. So philosophically, you want to make sure that you are focusing on marketing your business, being transparent, and letting the service providers control the end result of their work.
And the biggest thing with that, I would say, is are you telling the worker you have to go here or do they have the option to decline?
Oh, exactly. Workers can accept or reject a job. Yeah. And I would say probably another huge thing there is a worker should be encouraged to renegotiate the rate directly with the client. That's huge in our state, but really it should be for any state, is that if a worker thinks they're making X amount of dollars on this job, when they get there and they realize the scope of the work or the conditions there once they land are different than what was anticipated, they should be encouraged to renegotiate the rate directly with the client. That shows their independence. It shows that you have no control over that. But guess what? whatever they renegotiate to, you get your fee out of it. So if they take a 4-hour job and turn it into a 6-hour job, well, the worker's going to get paid on 6 hours, but the agency will collect its fees on the 6 hours as well.
Yep, absolutely. So at least as it comes to accept or decline, we document every time someone declines. They say, no, I don't want it, document. They say, hey, I want more pay, document. I look at it as positive. I'm like, great, you're giving me ammo. Can you put that in text? Sick. I'm going to copy it and put it in my Google Drive, right?
That's right.
That's how you should be thinking about it. And it's true, because think about if it's not when, but it's not if, it's when you get audited, do you have enough ammo with you? And Andy, the last one I'm going to bring up here, then I'll transition to some stories that maybe we've heard, would be, are your 1099s invoicing you? If they are not, you're not in great shape. What I mean by that is, the first thing an auditor is going to ask is, send me the invoices to prove that they are 1099s in their own businesses. If you're just paying them out, they're not invoicing you, that you are now an employer, because they, like, think about any vendor you work with. They send you an invoice, you pay it, right? That's how this thing works. If you're just sending payment based off of what you think it should be and they accept it, they are no longer 1099s. They're probably going to be your employees. That's a telltale sign. So like, please get them to invoice you. Literally type in free invoice generator into Google. There's a website called invoice-generator.com. Let them know, like, hey, however you want to invoice me is fine. Like, a lot of people do it through this template and you can just send it to me and I will pay you out on Sundays. That's what we do. So leave it to them to invoice you. That's a big one.
That's huge, because, you know, again, it's an independent business that's basically billing you for their services, and we call it a settlement. But I would just add to that, Neil, that a lot of the workers, at least in our industry, are programmed to call it a paycheck, call it a payroll. And we correct them each and every time that comes up that we're issuing you a settlement payment. So it's important to keep the terms crystal clear. Sometimes these workers will also call you boss or supervisor. You are neither of those things. So also just reinforcing the concept through the use of intelligent words, accurate words, goes a long way.
Yep. And look, for you listening, you might be thinking, dude, I'm not in California. It's not as strict over here. Why do we need to do this? Here's the reality. At some point, you will get audited if you're in business long enough. Andy, you've had this company for 30 plus years, been operating yourself for the last 15 years. Have you gotten audited?
Four times,
right? It's going to happen. And there's such small tweaks you can make to your business now, which would just make it so much easier if and when you do get audited. It's almost like a no-brainer. Just join CCDRA, get the contracts, get properly set it up, and at least you'll be in a better position to fight. Now, I've heard, and Andy, that we probably know a couple of the same people doing this, the fees that people get hit with if they get audited and they don't pass. The way it works, from my understanding, Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, the wages that you have paid to your 1099s in the last 3 years, they say, well, we should have collected taxes on this, so we're going to charge you for the taxes for these wages, plus a fee on top of that. Is that how they calculate it?
That's exactly right. They'll look at a 3-year period and they'll say, you know what? We need to reclassify your workers. We're going to now treat them all as employees. And now that they're employees, let's look at how much tax you actually owe, payroll taxes.
Yep.
So the state gets their cut. But you know what? This is also a fine because you are in violation of the laws. So then they'll issue a fine on top of that. And for some businesses, that can be comfortably into the six figures.
Yeah. What I heard from someone from like maybe 5 years ago, he got fined, I think, $125,000. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like $125,000. And then, look, you can fight it, right? This is a process. Like, there's things you can do. But, why put yourself in that situation, right? So there's just easy tweaks you could implement right now.
Yeah, I would say there's, you know, using independent contractors, it's a risk and reward calculation that you have to make. There's definitely benefits to it. But I would always recommend business owners, especially when they're starting off, to not be afraid to use legal advice. Yeah, it might cost you a little bit of money, but setting things up properly early on will go a long way downstream. And you'll reap all the benefits of being an agent without having to deal with the headaches of being an employer if you made that investment early on and just make sure that some things were done in a legal way.
Yeah. And for any of you listening to this and saying, oh my God, I'm scared. Like, why would I do this? Andy's been running this for 30 plus years, using this business model. I've been running for 10 plus years. There's tons of people running this business model successfully, even who have gotten audited and passed. It works. You just have to be compliant, right?
That's right.
And it's so much easier to do that if you're brand new. So that's something I want you to keep in mind. Andy, if people want to get in touch with you, ask you questions, learn more about you, learn more about CCDRA, where can they contact you?
Yeah, thanks, Neil. You know, we have a website, ccdra.org, and my email is andy@ccdra.org. You know, happy to help you if you have got questions. We're a nonprofit. We don't get paid to be board members. We just do this because we love our industry and it's our livelihood. So we want to do whatever we can to protect it.
Love it. Thank you so much, Andy. Thanks so much for hopping on today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Thanks again for listening, guys. There are two ways I could help you out. Number one is with May This Franchise. If you want to get into business but don't want to go at it alone, we have you covered with everything from A to Z. Check out madethisfranchise.com to start your own remote local business. The next is with the Remote Local Blueprint, which is a course I launched to teach you the foundations of starting your own remote local business in any niche. It's do-it-yourself at your own pace, and you can check that out at blueprint.beremotelocal.com.